Okay, good morning. We're learning today Perek Yudches, 18th chapter of the Gvuras Hashem. Where we are up to here in this continuing running commentary on the story of Geulas Yisrael in the beginning of Sefer Shemais is we've already discussed the birth of Moshe Rabbeinu and the beginnings of his life and of being saved. We learned last week about the lot of the different things. So here, Vayidal Hayeled Vativiyehu Al Bas Paray. So the Maral, for some reason, doesn't speak extensively at all about the idea around how she was nursed by Cheved. He speaks about the restoration. The child grew up, and she brought him to Bas Paray, to the daughter of Paray. So the Maral brings Darshu b'Medrash Chavdalet Chayvesh Vat Amid Vayidal Hayeled El Melamed Shaloi Shahayagodol Shaloi Kederach Kol Ha'oretz. Says, He says that he grew up. He says it's strange. It's only 24 months. After all, he was only keeping him until he would be weaned. So if she only kept him until he would be weaned, he was all of 2 years old. What is that expression? Vayigdal Hayeled. Vayigdal Hayeled. And as the Maral explains, regarding Yitzchak, it says Vayigdal Hayeled Vayigomal. It does use the term of Gidal, of growing up, but it says he grew up to be weaned. He grew up enough to be weaned. There's some level of growth which is there. But here it just says Vayigdal Hayeled. A sort of like open-ended, goda, to become big. And the Medrash says that Gidol Hayela Hazeh Shaloikim in Hagai Shal Olam, the growth of Moshe Rabbeinu was not normal, was beyond the realm of what is normally seen. And he says, and the idea is, V'udover nifla al Moshe Rabbeinu v'asholom l'heres madregas Moshe. He says, this is something unusual about Moshe Rabbeinu, to show the Madrega of Moshe Rabbeinu. And he goes on to cite what Chazal say about Moshe Rabbeinu, that Moshe Rabbeinu was of a height of 10 amos. The Gemara says it when it speaks about the putting up the Mishkan and spreading the curtains over it. The Mishkan was 10 amos tall, nobody else was able to do it, but Moshe Rabbeinu was able to do it because Moshe Rabbeinu was a Baal Kaima. And his height was not just he was taller than everybody else, but he was 10 amos tall, which is conservatively 15 feet. Okay? So that means take the two tallest centers in the NBA and have them stand one on top of the other's head. Okay? You know who won the tip-off at those Olympics. So what's the idea behind this? So obviously, first and foremost is that it shows the unusual nature of Moshe Rabbeinu. The Moshe Rabbeinu is a phenomenon. Just like we discussed a couple of weeks ago when we saw Vatera Isa Kitaivu, that Moshe Rabbeinu, from when he was born, it was observable, the goodness, the special quality of Moshe Rabbeinu. So too here at this point, similarly, we see that Moshe Rabbeinu was just different than everybody else. But the Maral goes a little bit further in explaining this, and he explains as follows, that Moshe Rabbeinu, we learned already back in the 16th chapter, that Moshe Rabbeinu was not subject to the pratim, to the specifics or the individuals or the details of Klal Yisrael. That's how the Maral explained, why does it say Vayelech Ish mi Beis Levi Vayikach es Bas Levi? Why does it describe the birth of Moshe Rabbeinu without any specifics at all? Why does it say that a man went from the house of Levi and took the daughter of Levi without mentioning that it was Amram who took Yecheved? Why instead does it just mention it generally? And the idea is, says the Maral, because we don't want to attribute Moshe Rabbeinu to this specific individual or that specific individual that brought him into the world. Because Moshe Rabbeinu was bigger than that. And Chazal use a language, Shokol Moshe Keneged Kol Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu is equal to the rest of the entirety of the Bnei Yisrael, of the Jewish people. That's the idea of Moshe Rabbeinu somehow not being able to be narrow to a specific. Whenever we speak in Torah, in the Maral especially, about the klal transcends regular individual parts. And Moshe Rabbeinu is that. He's not another person who showed up on the scene who happened to do great things for the Jewish people. Moshe Rabbeinu, to some degree, encompasses the Jewish people. That's why you will find, for example, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu proposes, I will destroy them and rebuild from you. Because in some sense, that's Moshe. Moshe is encompassing the totality, in a certain sense, of Kol Yisrael, of the Jewish people. And so says the Maral. When we find this idea that Moshe Rabbeinu grew, it wasn't just, okay, so he's not like everybody else. Yes, that would be something to say. That may even be enough to say. But it's more than that. Moshe Rabbeinu grew ultimately to be 10 amos, the way Chazal say it. Okay? Whether we understand this literally or not exactly literally, but Moshe Rabbeinu grew to be 10 amos. That's the height which Chazal chose to associate with Moshe Rabbeinu. Says the Maharal, the idea is because 10 is a mispar kolel. 10 is a whole number. Right? When you use the decimal system of mathematics, which is the standard system which is used in the world, so you have 1, 2, 3, they're all individuals, but when you get to 10, then you say, okay, we got a whole bunch. Right? 10 makes an Ada, 10 makes a Minyan. Right? When you're keeping count, so right, when you get up to 10, you make one line, right? Because it's one group of 10. It's a number which is klal, which is whole. That's why we speak about the idea of be'asara ma'moreis nivra ha'olam. Hashem created the world with 10 separate statements. It could have been created with one. There's a wholeness, a singularity to the process. However, instead of just doing it in a single process, it was done in a whole, with parts that come together with asara, with 10. But 10 is whole. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu would grow to represent the wholeness, the totality, the klolius, which is Moshe Rabbeinu. And therefore, he would grow to this size. And that's what this is indicative of. And that's why when he was so small and so young, he was already, you know, beyond the norm of unusual growing, because this was what he had to become. Okay? Maral Bergele discusses literal, not literal, exactly what more of the ideas of this 10 amos height of Moshe Rabbeinu, but for us, for now, this is the idea explaining behind the supernatural growth of Moshe Rabbeinu. Then what does it say? So it says that when he grew up, Vativiehu Labas Pare, she brought him back to the house of Pare, and the Maral uses this opportunity to discuss here in the Gvuras Hashem the idea that Moshe Rabbeinu ends up being raised in the house of Pare. Why is it that Moshe Rabbeinu, the one who would grow to be the leader of the Jewish people, the one who would take us out of Golus, and the one who would bring us the Torah, how is it that Moshe Rabbeinu goes through the years of his growth in the house of Pare Melech Mitzrayim and not growing up amongst Jews? Right? To a certain degree, right, his early Gidul takes place through the miraculous interventions that Yocheved nurses him. But Moshe Rabbeinu ends up in the house of Pare. And we have to understand what's the idea that Moshe Rabbeinu grew up in the house of Pare. And as the Maral says, even if you're going to say that Moshe Rabbeinu had to be, you know, he wouldn't be safe amongst the Jewish people, however, it's not necessary to have him grow up in the house of Pare, the king of Mitzrayim. Why is Moshe Rabbeinu growing up in the house of Pare, the king of Mitzrayim? And the Maral explains this as follows, and this is a twin passage to what the Maral writes in the Netzach Yisrael, Perek Chavches, which is the Maral's work on Golus Ugula, all of the Golus Ugula generally, as opposed to Gvuras Hashem, which is specifically about Golus and Geulas Mitzrayim. And he says that Davar Muflam Eidl Mevinim, and we're going to try to explain it. There are a couple of stages, a couple of layers to what the Maral teaches. And he says, Ki aheder davik benimtsoim, umitad aheder shadavuk benimtsoim tochol tzura acheres. Things lose, deteriorate, disappear. Heder is loss, absence. Things which exist in the world do come apart. They fail, they break. And because when they break, so through that tochol tzura acheres, a new form, a new shape can take hold. When you have something that is already defined, you can't do much with it. Right? If you have a house and you move into the house and you want the house to be a certain way, so you have two choices. Right? Three choices. You know, one choice is you pretty much stay with the same thing and you change the carpet and paint the walls. Right? Then you say, okay, you know, I'm gonna do, or maybe I'll take out a wall here, I'll put in something there. But you're working, you're constrained within a certain framework. If you want to really start from scratch, what do? You bring the wrecking ball, you knock the thing down, and you start again. The more that there is the pre-existing tzura present, the more limited you are in trying to develop something and trying to recreate. Says the Maral, therefore, that the heder, which has to come about in the one, is what makes room for the other. And the heder that we speak about specifically is the replacement of Malchus with Malchus. The replacement of the Malchus of the kingdom which existed before with a new Malchus, with a new kingdom that replaces it and supplants it. And that's the Malchus of Israel. When Moshe Rabbeinu is coming to redeem the Jewish people from Mitzrayim, so Moshe Rabbeinu has to supplant the Malchus of Paray Melech Mitzrayim. He has to take his place. When the Medrash brings, when discussing this, that the Melech HaMashiach she'osid li'pora me'edom yoshev imoem b'medina, the Melech HaMashiach who will punish Edom sits with them, lives with them in the Medina, in that place, because they're replacing, they're taking the place of that one. You know, the Maral writes in the Netzach, he writes it as well, even a little bit more so in the Ner Mitzvah. You know, we have this question about Yishmael and Yishmael's role in the scheme of things, in the scheme of the history of Golus of the Jewish people. We refer to four kingdoms, to Bavel, to Parasumadai, to Yavon, to Edom. Yishmael, however, seems to be a major antagonist to the Jewish people, as we experience as well today. But nevertheless, they don't figure in the story. So what's going on? And the yesod of the Maral is that every Golus ends with Malchus being restored to the Jewish people. Malchus derives from Malchus. Right? There's a Malchus of Bavel that loses to Malchus Yisrael. Or at least to Malchus of Paras Umadai, which then loses to Malchus Yisrael. The Malchus of the Jewish people, which is what Geula brings Malchus. Melech HaMashiach has to draw from another Malchus which was surrendered. And because Yishmael is just Nesius, but not Malchus, Yishmael doesn't have Malchus. Yishmael has, right, Shneim Asar Nesiyim Yelid. You don't find Melech by Yishmael, and part of the idea is because of their difficulty at submitting to the normal strictures of a society, of a top-down authority. So therefore they don't have Malchus. So they can't hand over the Malchus to the Jewish people. It doesn't work. Maral even goes further. He says their presence is not either a contradiction to the Malchus of Mashiach. It's only another opposing melech that contradicts the malchus of Mashiach. But if they're not malchus, so then they don't pose that much of a challenge in the same way either. It's malchus. It's the malchus of one that has to be nedar, that has to be lost, in order for the malchus of the Jewish people to take over. And so he writes and explains how we find in Chazal, in different places, that they say this. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says that Elio Anavi said to Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, said to Elio Anavi, where is Mashiach? And Elio Anavi said to him, he's sitting by the entrance of the Medina of Rome. He's sitting by the entrance of the city of Rome. And he goes on to discuss. And the Maharal explains this idea that he has to be right there, ready to assume as Rome, you know, as Rome comes apart,
declines
or you know, completely deteriorates, dissembles, right? So they have the, now steps in the Melech HaMashiach. And that's where he goes back even to explain, that's the idea that the Yada Echezes Ba'akev Esav. When Yaakov Avinu comes out, he's holding on to the heel of Esav, because he's going to assume the Malchus from the end of Esav. It's not coming in a vacuum. It's coming from that Malchus which was lost, that Heder which was created. So now we step into the breach and fill it and resolve it and, you know, and make something of it. That's the first Yesod, which the Maharal says. And that's how he's explaining. He grows in the house of Pare because Moshe Rabbeinu is actually going to be assuming the Malchus of Pare. Everyone knows the Medrash that says that, you know, what made Paro nervous about Moshe Rabbeinu was because he reached for his crown, right? That's the idea. Moshe Rabbeinu is taking the Malchus of Pare. So he grows up in the house of Pare to take the Malchus of Pare. That's it. In there. Hagam lichbaisha samalka imi babois. Yes.
This would imply that after Babel and after Yavon, that there was some Malchus in Israel that came out after those souls.
Well, Babel is, but with Yavon that is the case. With Yavon that is the case. As the Rambam even writes it, in the laws of Chanukah, that the great celebration of Chanukah is because Chazra Malchus LiYisrael LiYisrael MiMasayim Shana, that kingdom came back to the Jewish people. The Chashmonaim stood as kings of the Jewish people. The Jewish people had sovereignty and kings after that story. So yes, it's certainly true. By Bavel, it's a little bit trickier, because Golus Bavel went into the Golus of Paras U'Madai. One rolled into the other. Paras U'Madai took over from Bavel. Bavel took the Malchus from Israel, but didn't give the Malchus directly back to Israel. They gave it to Paras U'Madai that succeeded Bavel, and then we got it from Paras U'Madai. But it had to be a Malchus. It had to be a Malchus. The Maharal, however, goes on to say a second thing. And the second idea, which he says again both here and in the Netzach, is a little bit different. And he says, Malchus Yisrael HaKedusha Sheyesh LaMadrega Elikis Penimis Hitzaymachas Mitech Malchus Bilti Kedaisha. He says that the Malchus, which is the divine Malchus, has to sprout up in a certain sense from within a Malchus which is not Kedosha, which is not sacred. And what the Maharal is speaking about here is an idea that he will reiterate right at the end of this perek in a slightly different form and a different application. But the thing is like this: that which is holy is hidden. The whole nature of Kedusha, of sanctity, is its subtlety, is the fact that it's pnimis, that when you look at the externals, at the outward things within the world, you don't see it. Yes, there's such a thing as a world turned inside out at Har Sinai, so then sanctity became visible and the voice of Hashem was spreading throughout the world. However, the assumed and normal status of things where you, which you deal with within the B'nai Yisrael, within the Jewish people, is otherwise, is that the that which is divine, the more divine it is, the holier it is, the more hidden it is. And writes the Maral as follows: Malchus Yisrael Hakdusha Sheyesh Lo Madrega Elokis Pnimis Hitzaymachas Mitoich Malchus Bilti Kedosha. The Malchus of Mashiach, which is a divine Malchus, it must sprout up from within a Malchus which is not sacred. Shekach Roy La Malchus Sheyesh Lo Malokis Malapnimis. That's worthy for this Malchus, which has this divine inner quality. And that's the idea. And he brings the language of the Medrash, V'aitzi eish mitaychech, I will take the fire out from within you. Ki yitzias hakdusha nimsheles bo'eish, l'dakus ho'eish, teitze mitaych dover chel v'seref es hakel. Right, it's the fineness, right? It's when you speak about the various forms of matter, Ofor, Mayim, Ruach, Eish, right? Fire is the most fine, and it consumes everything else. And so he says, look what happens when you have a fruit, which is the main thing. What happens? It grows up within some kind of a husk. I mean, this isn't always true, that it just happens by itself, but it grows within a husk. And as it grows and it develops, the top falls away. It has to grow up protected. It has to grow up inside, hidden. And then as it grows and flourishes and develops, that which surrounded it, the context in which it grew, falls away and disappears. And so says the Maharal, Moshe Rabbeinu therefore grew up a base par liyes yoytes hamadrega agdoisha lekisha elamoshe mitech dover achomri. Timloi kein loyo hoyo elanivdal madrega penimis. If Moshe Rabbeinu grew up in a nice Jewish home, so to some degree Moshe Rabbeinu would not be nurtured with pnimius, with an internal world. The more we're able to be out there, the less internal we are. Moshe Rabbeinu was a Marano, okay, without going to church. Moshe Rabbeinu was growing up in the house of Paray. There he was, inside of the house of Paray, where all externals he should show should be of an Ish Mitzri, of an Egyptian man, where all externals he should show would be of no connection to the Jewish people. But yet Moshe Rabbeinu nurtured the nature of a Jew within himself. He nurtured his connection of the Jewish people within himself, despite the fact that on the outside he couldn't, and to some degree because of the fact that on the outside he couldn't. What do I mean? Isn't that our struggle? Isn't our consistent struggle that when we do things outside, you know, in the open, visible, we say, but one second, am I really feeling it? Am I really feeling it? There's a struggle there to really feel it. When the outside doesn't even allow you to have it or to express it, so then there's the strength has to be there from the inside to cultivate the Madrega Primis. For there to be Ktusha, it has to be from the inside out, not from the outside in. And therefore, to cultivate the internal Kedusha of Moshe Rabbeinu and the internal greatness, the godliness of the Goyel, it had to start from the inside. And putting Moshe Rabbeinu into the house of Paro and having him grow up, right, not where he has a chumash party, not where he has external, easy trappings in order to be able to make it, but only from the inside, that is the koyach that Moshe Rabbeinu developed, and that was where the thing could be tzemeach from. Just like he brings the simpler mashal of the fruit, that in order to develop that which is great, it has to be covered by other stuff, and it grows really from the inside out. That's the world of the development of spirituality. I will just jump ahead so that our thoughts are less we're not going to follow. I'll remind you of it, Mi'at Hashem, at the end, but not following the sequence, which is what the Maharal is doing. But it says that when Moshe Rabbeinu smote the Egyptian, he hid him vayitmenehu b'chol in the sand. And Chazal say, the Medrash says, that nimshalu Yisrael l'chol. The Jewish people are compared to the sand. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe, to Avram, at a certain point, right, his children will be like the sand by the sea. So what's the comparison to the sand? And he says, the idea is that sand is a very muffling kind of a material. Right? If a person is running in the sand, you don't hear anything. Right? It's... Right? The sand muffles things. Like here, the sand is used as well to hide the mitzri. And he says that the idea is, it's an interesting idea because one could have heard otherwise, he says sand is very fine. Right? The reason, the physics reason why it muffles sound is going to be because of its all these separate pieces, and you know, therefore it, you know, somehow its absorbent quality is different. But he says the fact that sand is separate, little tiny pieces, there's no hispashtus hachemer, there's no spreading, there's no growth in sand. Each particle remains separate by itself. He says, Geber Hageshem, the nature of physicality is hispashtus harachakim, is spreading something to the different poles, to the different ends, and the sand remains separate. So it's somehow less physical. Now, I say you could have heard it otherwise, because we also discuss about the idea that ruchnius is tsura, which brings together different pieces, right? So therefore something which would remain separate, like the Maharal says by Mayim, like the Maharal is going to repeat in the next piece that we're going to learn by Mayim, you could see that as being actually a sign of physicality. But here, and I can't explain to you, you know, why he does in one way, another way, but here he's seeing sand as being something which is a lesser physicality. And so he says, the less physical something it is, the more muffled it is, the more quiet it is. The nature of Klal Yisrael, again, is panimi. They have the mala bilti gashmis, they have the level that's not physical, and therefore, in a sense, the things which they do are not able to be sensed, not able to be noticed. They're benistar. They're going to be more hidden and more private. And so he, again, describing the same idea. So we have this idea occurs here twice within this parak. Next. So Batya called the name of Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe, ki min ha-mayim mishisiu, because I drew him from the water, as we know. And Chazal point out and say, look at this, she gave him the name Moshe, and that's the name which stuck. When Hashem spoke, he spoke not to Toiv or to Tuvia, names which the Medrash says Moshe Rabbeinu was given when he was born. No, the name which Moshe Rabbeinu was known by was the name that was given to him by the daughter of Parai. What's going on? So the Medrash says, from here you see the reward of those who act with kindness, Gaim Lechasadim. Vasya acted with great kindness to save Moshe Rabbeinu, and so she was rewarded that Moshe Rabbeinu would carry her way forever, her name forever. So beautiful, very nice, right? A nice Chazal for a speech about being a nice person. The Maharal takes it a level deeper, and there's a resonance of this Chazal, because where else do Chazal famously say this is to teach you the reward of those who do kindness? It's when it speaks of why Megillas Rus, why the story of Rus was recorded. The Medrash says it doesn't happen in halachas, although we do learn certain halachas from Megillas Rus, right? Geirus, and other things also. But the Medrash says it's not a halachic teaching. Why is it there? It's there to teach you the rewards of those who do kindness. That's what the Medrash says. And Megillas Rus is the story that we read when? On Shavuos. So the way the Maharal explains it here, Pashut, beautiful, is Moshe Rabbeinu was the Nisan HaTorah. And what's the Torah? The Torah is Tchilasa Gemilas Chasadim, V'Seifa Gemilas Chasadim. It starts with Gemilas Chasadim, it ends with Gemilas Chasadim. In the middle, Chazal say it has Gemilas Chasadim. It starts with Hashem clothing Adam and Chava. It ends with Hashem burying Moshe Rabbeinu. In the middle, you have Hashem visiting Avraham Avinu when he is sick. The Torah is Gemilas Chasadim. Drachecha darchei noyam v'chol nesiveiseh ha'shalayim. Its ways are ways of sweetness. All of its paths are peaceful. It's called Teras Chesed. Teras Chesed al Shaina. And therefore, what Moshe Rabbeinu is the person who teaches us the Torah, and Moshe Rabbeinu gets his name by somebody who was clued into the essence of Torah, which was Gemilas Chasadim. It's not just, here, she did a nice thing, we'll give her a prize, she gets to give the name to the guy who gave the Torah to the Jewish people. It's integral to Matan Torah. Because since Torah is Torah's Chesed, so therefore isn't it appropriate that Moshe Rabbeinu's life should be granted to him through a specific act of outstanding Chesed, and that act of Chesed should leave its imprint on the life of Moshe Rabbeinu in his name. Moshe Rabbeinu is defined by Chesed, he's maintained by Chesed, and so that's the specific idea of the Schar. That's why we read Megillah, part of Megillah, reading Megillah, Rus on Shavuos. You know, Rus did not join the Jewish people the way we read it because of some theological epiphany. She didn't come, even though it describes her as coming to take shelter in the wings of Hashem's presence, but it doesn't describe her as doing it because of a search for that kind of spiritual religious meaning. She did it because she felt that she did not want to leave her mother-in-law bereft. She had struggled and suffered enough as it is, and she did not want to leave her bereft. And therefore, she stuck with her, and she said, I'll stay with you wherever it is. Your people will be my people, your God will be my God. Her goal was Gemilas Chasadim. She wasn't coming for selfish purposes. And that's the idea. You don't come. The Ger Avgolis guy, you have to make sure he's not coming because of a Dover Ba'ilim, because of material considerations. She didn't come because of material considerations. Material considerations would have pushed her in the opposite direction. Okay. So that's another Nakuda that the Maral says. And then he says, and his name, however, is given to him because he was drawn from the water. And here the Maral discusses again something that we've already touched upon twice in our learning of the Maral of the Gvuras recently, and that is the contrast between Moshe Rabbeinu and water. We talked about it, by why the sorcerers of Paray, and the Maral goes over this again here, saw that Moshe Rabbeinu would be undermined by the water, would be ultimately destroyed by the water, by the Mei Meriva, but they couldn't make out what it was. They just saw Moshe Rabbeinu as the opposite of water, drawn from the water. And the Maral explains, and we'll just go over it quickly because again we've discussed it before, the Maral explains that Moshe Rabbeinu is the Baal Tzura. Moshe Rabbeinu is the one who comes to lead the Jewish people, to give form to the masses, and direction to the masses of the Jewish people. In general, chachma, wisdom, is tzura, right? Wisdom takes the raw materials and gives it a purpose and a direction. And that was what Moshe Rabbeinu did with Nesinas HaTorah. Moshe Rabbeinu, as we said before, he's the klal. He's the entirety of the Jewish people. He takes the disparate parts and unifies it together for a purpose. That's the opposite of water. Water is considered the ultimate in Chaymer, in that water has no form. Water takes on, right, a ball of clay is also Chaymer, but at least it has a little bit of, it stays together by itself. Water without a clear container, it just dissipates. It falls out all over the place and spreads and you end up losing it and it'll evaporate, that much more quickly, as it spreads over a broader surface. Mayim, as the Maral says here, and as he said elsewhere, Mayim in Hebrew is Lashon Rabim. It's in the plural, right? Which is an indication, again, of lack of a unifying purpose and form. Even there's no singular to waters in the language of Lashon Kodesh in Hebrew. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu is described as pulled from the water, because the water is the opposite force to Moshe Rabbeinu, is the dissipation. And if you think about it, so the Maral writes a little bit here later in the Perek, he says that the mistake that the Itztagninim made was that they thought that water, just plain water, would do in Moshe Rabbeinu, but water would only do in Moshe Rabbeinu when Moshe Rabbeinu sinned. When he sinned at Mei Meriva, so then he failed. But what does him in? What does him in is Mei Meriva, the waters of strife, of argument, the waters which present not a unified, but a divided vision and presence of the Jewish people. And so, we speak of this. And I want to mention two nekudas, two nice points, which the Maral adds in this particular discussion of Moshe Rabbeinu versus water. I'll do the second one first. He says, when Chazal want to underscore the weakness of a person, they say, look at three things and you will not come to sin. And one of them is, me'ayin basa, where do you come from? And where do you come from? Mitipasrucha, from a putrid drop. Says the Maral, that's from water. Right? A person recognizes the beginnings, hachaymer hapachesh abadam huminatipasrucha shuhamayim, hashem belitzura. Sort of like a shapeless form called water. And the strength of Moshe Rabbeinu was that he was mashui mimayim. He was drawn out of that and made into the ultimate of a bal tzura, of a person of shape, a person of form. That's one thing which the Maral says, a nakuda, a point to consider. The second thing that the Maral says, is actually in the first chronologically, is the following, very interesting thing. So water stands in contrast to Moshe. Moshe is putting together, giving the world a direction, a form, a shape. And on the other hand, you have the water, which stands as the opposite of that, the ribui. Of course, an instance where Hashem wanted to destroy the world. How did he destroy the world? The Mabul with Mayim, with water. But look what it describes. It does. The term for destruction that's used in the Torah is Vayimach. Vayimach is that he erased. Right? The term Vayimach is the erasure of Tzura, the erasure of form, of structure. That's the way the destruction took place. It was not destruction of Chaimer, it was destruction of Tzura. That's the way it goes, and that's what water does, because water is Chomer Beli Tzura. It's matter without form. And that's why it's described as Michui, which is again losing the form, losing the shape, rather than losing anything else. And so, he says a gewaldige thing. He finishes off with a fantastic thing. He says that there are two hints to Moshe Rabbeinu in the story of the Mabul. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu is thinking about destroying the world in the Mabul, he says, "Lo yodun ruchi ba'adam la'ayla, my spirit will not struggle with man forever, b'shagam hu basar, for he is also flesh, v'ayu yamav, and his days will be me'yav esrim shana." 120 years. We're in the middle of Shir. So he says, his years will be 120 years. So the Gemara says, first of all, that 120 years is the 120 years of Moshe Rabbeinu. Number one. Number two, the Gemara says, Moshe min ha-Torah minayin. Where do we have Moshe referenced in the Torah? Which of course is not... it was pretty sort of like an easy answer to that question, right? But what it means is here, where do you have a hint to Moshe Rabbeinu even before he appears in the Torah? Even before Sefer Shmos. And the Gemara says, because it says, Bishagam Hu Basar. And the Gemara Chulin, B'shegam is B'gematria Moshe, right? It has the Shin, it has the Mem, and also has a Beis and Gimel, 2 plus 3, which equals Hey, equals the Hey of Moshe Rabbeinu. B'shegam Hu Basar. So that's the reference to Moshe Rabbeinu. And, you know, there's different levels in which it's understood, one level being, you know, even Moshe Rabbeinu is a human being. Right, so we'll have to, he'll also be finite, he'll also be limited, and he'll only live till 120 years. But what's the hints here to Moshe Rabbeinu specifically right here at the Mabul? And says the Maral, because if Moshe Rabbeinu represents the human potential of being Moshui Mimayim, of being the opposite of water, of really having the tzura, the form of a human being, of having a unified vision and a shape and a direction. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu was. So when Hashem says, one second, I'm hesitating, I'm not going to erase the world, I'm not going to erase the tzura of the world, the barrier that says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm not going to do it right away. I'm not going to do it right away is because there's something called Moshe Rabbeinu. There's something like that being called Moshe Rabbeinu. It's a very interesting, I think it's a very interesting and notable comparison. What of course is striking in this and in general is that there's a whole other stream, excuse the pun, of interpretation of how things go here. Because remember, what else is compared to water? Tyre is compared to water. So, you know, that's not Chaimer. And even when it comes to the Mabul, there's a famous statement which is found in different Midrashim and in the Zohar, that at the time of the Mabul, it could have been the time of the giving of the Torah. In fact, there's an opinion that there's a relationship, a Gilgal relationship between Noach and Moshe Rabbeinu. So it could have been that the waters which came upon the world would have been the waters which gave life, which would be the waters of Torah. And instead, because we were in Zecha, the waters came and washed away. Right? What do we say? Hashem Lamabul Yoshev. Right? Vayeshev Hashem Melech Li'olam. So you have to deal with that. Maral doesn't deal with that here. I don't know. Maybe he deals with it someplace. But it's one of those things. There are many times where we find these things that can represent in thought something and its opposite. Here he's making the case for Moshe Rabbeinu being the opposition of Mayim, and that's real. On the other hand, Moshe Rabbeinu is also going to be the deliverer of the greatest Mayim, of the water of Torah, which is considered the actual Torah itself of the world. The davar hatzarech Talmud, it's something which requires understanding.
The pasuk shegam hu basar, where is that?
It's at the end of Parshas Bereishis, in anticipation of the Mabul, where Hashem is saying, I can't continue with this forever. I'll give them 120 years. Because after all, they're also flesh. I can't struggle with them forever. Okay. So, One more thing, and with that we will conclude. Vayid al Moshe vayetze el Echav. Moshe grew up and went out to his brothers. It said Vayid al before. It said the Moshe Rabbeinu grew up and she brought him to the house of Paro. She brought him to the daughter of Paro. Then it says again, and Moshe Rabbeinu grew up and he went out to his brothers. So the Medrash says, what's the Vayidal, Vayigdal? The first one is Lekaima, was height, physical growth, and the second one was Ligdula, greatness. And the greatness was Vayetze Elechav. So what does that mean? So you might say prominence, significance, an important position, something like that. Says the Maral, no. As we see, as the Medrash itself goes on to discuss, Moshe Rabbeinu's greatness lay in the fact that he left the comforts of the palace to go and see what was going on with his brothers. That's the gedula of Moshe Rabbeinu. That is greatness. Greatness is malas hanefesh. Mi sheyesh bei min hashifus einei makbid bazeh. Someone who is of a lowlier spirit doesn't care. His brothers are suffering. Okay, fine. It's okay. I'm here in the air conditioning. But because Moshe Rabbeinu grew, because Moshe Rabbeinu was great, the suffering of his brothers was his agenda, was his concern. That's the godless of Moshe Rabbeinu. And so, right, as much as it discusses this detail, that detail about exactly what Moshe Rabbeinu did, but because Moshe Rabbeinu went beyond his own concerns to concern himself with Klal Yisrael, so too HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you're going beyond yours, I'll go, so to speak, beyond mine, and I will concern myself with Klal Yisrael. But this is the big deal. We spoke before about the Tairas Chesed, that Basia is acting with Chesed, and therefore she gets to name Moshe Rabbeinu, who is going to give Taira, which is all Drachah Darchinayim, it's all Chesed. But look in Moshe Rabbeinu himself in his own life. Moshe Rabbeinu also only emerges to somehow begin the process of assuming the leadership of Klal Yisrael when he himself becomes big. And big means concerning yourself with others, going beyond your own simple private concerns. Last night, at the end of Shabbos, you said, or you should have said, V'yitn lecha. I say you should have said because many shuls don't say V'yitn lecha. The reason why shuls don't say V'yitn lecha is because there's a minig for people to say V'yitn lecha at home before they say Havdalah. That's why in benchers you'll find V'yitn lecha. You ever wonder why in benchers you find you don't find Ma'ariv Matzah Shabbos, you find V'yitn lecha? It's because the people who don't say it in shul are not saying it in shul because they want to say it at home. Somehow something gets lost in the translation, right? But in the Yitin Lecha we quote a memra of Rabbi Yechanan, and the memra, the statement of Rabbi Yechanan, which is found in the Gemara in the end of Megillah, if I remember correctly, the Gemara says, "Am Rabbi Yechanan, mechol makim shatamaytze gedulasoi shel Hakadosh Baruch Hu, shom atamaytze an v'sanusoi." Wherever you find the greatness of Hashem, you find His humility. What's that? It says, okay, la good, la gibor, va nair, Hashem, great. And then it says, who worries about the widow and the orphan? The Gemara brings it from Taira, from the Vim, from Tzuvim, from every section of the Taira. What's that? That's right here. Vayigdal Moshe, vayetzei lachav. Moshe Rabbeinu became great. Mm-hmm. In what way did he become great? He became a lofty soul, like the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he went out to worry about the downtrodden, about his brothers who were being beaten up. That's the real godless of Moshe Rabbeinu. That's why Basia, quote unquote, becomes his mother. Her leap, arguably, was even bigger than the leap of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu grew up in the house of Parai, right? But he was adopted. His family of origin was the Bnei Yisrael. He was returning to be with his brothers. Bas Parai, Mialde Ivrimze, she really reached across. She had real godless. Not that Moshe Rabbeinu never was, you understand what I'm saying? That in a certain sense, when you put the one up next to the other, so one could say, you know, just end, you know, the Sforno notes, that when we find Moshe Rabbeinu growing up, so what happens? First, he defends a Jew from an Egyptian. That's easy, quote unquote. In other words, emotionally, you know, them against us. Then he defends a Jew from another Jew, which requires a higher level of concern. It's not us versus them anymore. And then, what's his third story? Is he goes to Midian and he sees these Midianite women and they're being harassed, and he saves them. Even Moshe Rabbeinu had to even go beyond Vayetzei Alechav. He had to go beyond just concerning himself with his brothers. He ended up doing something which is actually similar to what Basia did in one fell swoop. Okay, a good talk.